It's time to play big on Moto Social Casino, America's hottest free-to-play social casino experience. Moto.us has live casino games. It's time! Play big, win bigger on Moto.us today.
Moto is a social casino, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Visit Moto.us for more details.
It's time!
Moto.us.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Harvard University, much in the news. Most recently, the New York Times writing a summary piece of what is the tax-exempt status and can the IRS revoke it from Harvard? This is following remarks by the President of the United States, Mr. Trump, writing in Truth Social about the tax-exempt status of Harvard University. The simple version is this. It would lose Harvard a great deal of flexibility with its endowment and the incoming money. That's the simple version of losing tax-exempt status. However, this is part of the larger story about the Harvard conflict with the Trump administration and with the United States of America's population in general, since the very, very unacceptable conduct of students and graduate students and faculty during 2024 conducting themselves with anti-Semitic demonstrations that you did not have to interpret them. You saw straight up what was going on was hatred. I welcome Peter Berkowitz, writing most recently his column at Real Clear Politics. He's at the Hoover Institution, and he is writing of a remedy for the dispute between the Trump administration and the Harvard University leadership. This recent turn of the road, the tax-exempt status, is only one of several things that the Trump administration has said we're going to impose, not the least of which is giving up a great deal of money about federal grants. But other matters can involve the Trump administration guiding Harvard as to what can and cannot be taught in classrooms, similar to what the settlement looked like at Columbia University. Peter, a very good evening to you. You say there is a remedy, but the way you find a remedy is to go through the suggestions made by people before. I believe that two very distinguished members of the Manhattan Institute have recommended in different ways approach to Harvard, Heather McDonald and Christopher Rufo. So what we're looking at here are suggestions that deal with facts on the ground. Let's establish some facts, because you've taught at Harvard and you know that this is a very precious learning environment that is venerated worldwide. At the same time, it went horribly wrong in 2024. And you have said before that was a long time coming. What is wrong? What is the problem, Peter? Can we distill it down to a couple of sentences? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Yes, we can. But first, we have to distinguish near-term causes for the problem and long-term causes. The near-term causes are the indulgence of anti-Semitism, especially this surge of anti-Semitism after Hamas's October 7th massacres in southern Israel, and the practice of racial discrimination. You and listeners will recall that in 2023, the Supreme Court invalidated Harvard's admissions policies. It said that they were contrary to the Constitution because they discriminated based on race. So those are the short-term causes. Over the last several years, discrimination based on race has grown for many years. Anti-Semitism has been around for many years. But the longer-term causes, going back many, many decades, are the debasement of liberal education at Harvard. Harvard has for a long time offered a shambolic curriculum, by which I mean it's a smorgasbord. Faculty lard it with the courses they prefer to teach, which focus on their arcane research interests, rather than teaching courses that are essential to a proper undergraduate education. And in other courses, they, especially in the humanities and social sciences, they turn those courses into vehicles for propagating left-wing propaganda. So those are the short-term causes and long-term causes. The Trump administration is right. Our universities are desperately in need of reform.
We come to recommendations for what is to be done. You point to several articles that have been published recently by the Manhattan Institute. Let's begin with Heather McDonald and Christopher Rufo as the second one. we come to Heather McDonald's recommendation is what I say is a balancing of the curriculum. What would that look like in her mind?
Of course, Heather, wonderful writer, has been a longtime critic of the university's war on free speech and the university's practices of discrimination, which they cloak in the rhetoric of diversity. But diversity on campus for a long time has in fact meant, I'm speaking now of diversity, equity, and inclusion programs, means allocating benefits and burdens and imposing burdens based on race. Heather's been a great critic of those practices. But when she sees the Trump administration demanding that it supervise the restoration of viewpoint diversity on campus, and that Harvard and that the federal government supervise the creation of a truly intellectually diverse faculty at Harvard, she gets quite worried, because these are the terms, this is the terminology that universities have used for years in order to impose, in effect, intellectual conformity. And she raised questions about federal government competence. Who really is it in the White House, or who is it in the executive branch that's going to be in a good position to make these judgments? So Heather is worried about legal questions, and she's worried about federal government competence, which, in my opinion, are fair worries to have.
The article that Heather McDonald publishes is the White House's clumsy attack on Harvard. Now we come to Christopher Rufo, also of the Manhattan Institute. He publishes The Right is Winning the Battle Over Higher Education. The metaphor there already troubled me when I started reading the title. The word battle, that seems inappropriate to what we're talking about, but in any event, what does he recommend, Peter?
Well, you're right, though, John, to focus on battle. He sees this as a war, and he wants to win the war. He wants to fight fire with fire. What does he mean in this context? He notes, again, correctly, that the great 1964 Civil Rights Act, the purpose of which was to create a colorblind government, that is, a government that did not discriminate based on race, has actually been used in order as a vehicle to regulate opinion and, again, to promote a progressive agenda. Rufo's idea is to use the tools of the left and to aggressively use civil rights law today to unwind the race-conscious policies that have been adopted by the university, to empower the federal government to step in to protect the proper understanding of civil rights law, that is, no discrimination based on race. In effect, that means to commandeer or to throw into federal receivership the universities until they purge anti-Semitism and purge discrimination based on race. So he wants a very aggressive policy without paying very much attention to questions about limited government and questions about legal niceties.
I point to Columbia University to understand, because part of the remedy Columbia University has acceded to is supervision of some of its classes and some of its curriculum, which I believe right now is in train. They're setting that up. Peter, that's inviting a referee in to look at academic material. It would be extremely intimidating to students and might actually keep faculty members away from wanting to teach, wouldn't it? I mean, this is how it would practically be applied.
Yes, that's right. Although I believe there is a difference between what's taking place at Columbia and what the Trump administration proposed for Harvard. That is, Trump administration required Columbia to put departments, specific departments, into receivership, but the receivership was not itself administered by the federal government. And the Harvard idea seems to involve direct federal monitoring of academic programs at Harvard. And that, so that raises much more serious concerns.
Academic freedom is a phrase that's used all the time. You're an academician. You're a teacher. Mm-hmm. What does it mean? Not just to you, but what is it understood to mean?
Well, at this point, it has acquired too many meanings. The basic idea of academic freedom is that In the classroom and in making professional decisions about scholarship, about teaching, the scholar should be free and should not be punished for his or her opinions. Academic freedom has also been understood to encompass extracurricular opinions. That is, as a professor, I do not lose my rights as a citizen to opine about political matters. So I should not be punished in hiring and promotion decisions at my university because administrators do not like political opinions that I have expressed on the side. However, academic freedom is not a license for me to bring my political opinions into the classroom. It's certainly not a license to impose those opinions on students. That would be an abuse of academic freedom.
Peter Berkowitz, writing at the Hoover, writing for the Hoover Institution. He's writing his column at Real Clear Politics. There's a third way, and when we come back, what is to be done?
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Let's check in with golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
Whoa, John, what are you playing?
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know, I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. That's Daly. Moto Casino, hands down, has the best VIP experience. Take it from one high roller to another. If you're ready to go for the greens with me, grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit moto.us for more details.